Accession number 27791, Mr. Reuben Hyams, Reel 5. Now, so you were doing this period with the surgical team operating behind the front line during the advance through the Western Desert.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything in particular, remember? Anything, you know, any details?
Oh, no details of it, because it was a repetitious... At one time, we were just by a well in the desert, and with nothing going on. We were all set up there, and suddenly the ADMS, Assistant Director of Medical Services, came turning on his staff side. So I said, "You've got 10 minutes to move, the Jerry's are behind me." So we dragged everything out, threw it in the back of the lorry, and off we went. I lost all my kit there, wasn't able to, except my emergency kit, which I always carry, which was my water bottle, my emergency ration, bedroll, and tin helmet. Anyway, when I got back, we finally got back to camp and we were equipped. Eventually, I was posted back to the main unit again. I don't know whether this officer got fed up with me, but I was very glad when he said, "We're dispensing with you," because it was excess to requirements at that time. But the formations of these surgical teams were continually changing. I think were experimental. Anyway, I think they did a very good job. I mean, personal feelings don't come into it.
What were you doing when you got back to the main unit? Were you with the
light? I went onto the ward work again. Same thing, but this was a light section again. The repetitious of the other now. Then back to, as I said, back down to the delta. But this time, of course, it was bad. Jerry had broken through. The main section, heavy section, moved off. But we were always an advance of 20, 30 miles in advance of them. And then we got to, this is where they really got naughty. They're advancing very rapidly, and we had wounded to stay. Ward by ward, as they went, they were taken down, they managed to get transport. And I was left with a couple of others and an officer.
Now, when is this? I
can't remember exactly. This is, actually before Alamein. Well before Alamein. And it was rather confused because there was so much going on. There was lorries and going and coming and going. And they asked for volunteers to stay behind. And I said, I would volunteer. And I was refused. He said, "Are you Jewish?" I said, "I don't know the difference. I'm in the medics and I want to stay." Because I felt that I was an ambassador for my people. I can, if you can understand that. Anyway, to cut a long story short, we managed to get rid of them, but we were down to 2 vehicles now. And it was in every man for himself. That we were told that. We were told to head towards east. We had a limited supply of water and food, but there were two wagons. And we went down through the Katara Depression. Now they say it's impossible to pass through for tanks, etc. But we spent about 10 days travelling through that depression, sometimes travelling at high speeds over salt flats and being bogged down, stopping and going down to the differentials. Unload the vehicle, dig it out, carry it forward to, carry the goods forward again, all the materials that we had, and move off. Never knowing what was happening, because we had no radio, no contact. However, we finally got back to the road connecting Alexandria and Cairo, and we could see the traffic moving. And we had no idea at all who had it, whether it was us or them. Am I still working? Yeah. Anyway, we decided this. If it was going to be in German hands, I wasn't going to go. I was going to go. What happened? I wasn't going to go. We unloaded the two wagons, and put all the petrol, food, water, and spares we could on one wagon, determined that we would make our way south as far as we can, to join up with the South African. However, we had no maps, nothing. It was doomed from the start, although thank God it never actually happened. And one man volunteered to go forward. Now we could see the traffic, and we were just below the horizon. And he went off, and we gave him 2 hours to come back. 2 hours later, an MP drove up. We were home safe and sound. Oh, well, we joined the main unit, and then we carried on. This would come up to now preparing for the invasion of Sicily and Italy.
Well, you still got all Alamein and
well, of course. You know,
there's no retreat after Alamein.
No.
It must be before Alamein.
We came up to Alamein. We were, for Alamein, we joined the unit, still in the light section. But at Alamein, we were behind, obviously, between there and Cairo. And we opened a hospital, and we worked normally. When I say normally, under wartime conditions, taking casualties. And of course came the break, and they stopped. Monty took over. Monty, of course, was an inspiration. But the biggest disappointment of all, apart from this, was the fact when Tobruk fell. For me, Tobruk had fallen during that period. For me, the fact that Tobruk fell was the worst blow that could have happened. Although I never doubted from the day I entered the army, or from the war broke out, to the day of victory, that I never doubted that we would win in the end. Never doubted that for one moment, irrespective of all the setbacks that occurred. However, as I said, at the Alamein battle, I wasn't in the Alamein battle. I was attached to the tank corps, tanks. And again, it wasn't a light section, it was a part of the light section, leaping forward this time. And we were in this, but this time we had our own lorries. We said we were a completely mobile unit. And I usually travelled in an ambulance. Anyway, Alamein came. We stayed behind for about 3 days till the infantry went in first, as you know. And then the gap was cleared and the tanks went through. We were with them, behind them. At one time, I think second or third day, we didn't stop for a few days. The other units, of course, leapfrogging them. We were pulling along. This time we're on the coast road, because sometimes in the desert, it all depends. And we passed through a New Zealand tank unit. They were cleaning the guns and replenishing. And a figure stepped out in the road and asked them, where the FML are you going to? It's only Freiburg himself, nothing in front of us, he said. Again, Tamil's turned around very fast. And went back. And this is a funny thing that happened. Of course, you remember, you won't remember, but what happened was, when the Germans got the nosebleed at Alamein, they took all the transport and left all the Italians behind. They were wandering around the desert, some of them without with no food and water, giving themselves up in the cells. And I don't blame the poor bugger. Anyway, we're travelling on this convoy. We pulled off to sleep. And I'm sleeping in the ambulance, and about 4 o'clock in the morning, locked at the door. What's this? I've got a bedpan in my hand. What? What made me pick up? And there's 5 Italians armed, surrendering to me. Anyway, I told them, I gave them some water, and they go under the door. That was perhaps, and the only other incident was the day after, we'd had some rain during the night. We're passing, we stopped for a meal, and there were some bodies laying on the, and our job was to look at them. Good job it was raining, because I saw like a line of light. They were booby-trapped. Anyway, to carry on then, of course, right the way through up, so we stopped.
What do you mean a line of white? What was that?
With a thin line of wire, which had been covered with the raindrops, and it was attached to a booby-trap under the bodies.
So who would deal with that?
Sappers. That would be dealt with by the sappers. And of course, my instinct was to see if they were still alive, I think. Anyway, to cut a long story short, finally finished up going right through to the end.
Now, as you know, cutting a long story short is exactly what we don't want you to do.
Well, I mean, it was repetitious of itself. Advance, set up, open up, work, evacuate, repack, and move on. I think other units were leapfrogging us in, but we didn't know much what was happening. We know we had our own sector to live on, work on. Eventually, of course, if I went to Tunis, and finally back down to the Delta to re-equip. Now for Sicily in Italy. We re-equipped a place just outside the Suez. So, and we went through the Suez Canal. And finally, I ended up...
Now, when you say re-equip, what does it mean?
Well, equipped, we had new tentage, new vehicles were waterproofed, or light equipment, they had better equipment all that for the job. And of course, you've got to look, I mean, surgical instruments, use their efficiency, use their get dull and have to be replenished. New autoclaves, that's the equipment that does the sterilizing, has to be serviced, etc. So they were up in peak top condition. And I landed Sicily, dry landing at Sicily, I landed on the quay. There was no resistance.
You don't remember anything about the voyage or across?
Voyage was just as apprehensive. Same as all voyages were, it was pretty quite, only not bad.
Whereabouts did you land at?
Syracuse. In the Syracuse.
What happened when you landed at Syracuse?
There was very little resistance. I landed on the quay, as I said. It was, part of it was burning. But I went ashore normally, and the lorries followed us off. And I drove up to a place that had already been designated, and we opened a hospital there. But before getting there, we came under machine gun fire.
Now what happened? Tell us the story.
Well, I was in the vineyard, lay on the ground on the vineyard, picking the grapes off the vine, which made me very, very ill, because I hadn't seen any grapes or anything like that for years. Anyway, after a while, the firing stopped, and we moved forward and took over this. I think it had been a school. As a hospital, and from then on, there was a series of moving forward, exactly the same. Only this time, we didn't use many tents. We usually finished up in a building of some sort. Catania was a big place for us, and I remember that on the way to Catania, across the Catania plains, a formation of four motorbikes and a staff, a jeep crew up. The sirens were in blaring. It was Monty. Waved us down. "Oh, are you boys?" "Yes, sir." "Where are you going?" "Sir." "Oh, yes." Took out his maps and showed us what the Germans would give them their right arm for. A map of the whole front. And he even told us where we were going. And he gave us a packet of 200 cigarettes. Anyway, from there, it was just before Catania. From there, of course, it was moving up. Forward, to back was not back, but always forward this time, which was quite a difference to other times. And we came to a place called Campo Basso. Now this was, we were
where?
Campo Basso. It's in the central of Italy. Here we
Italy.
Were,
I thought
you were in Sicily. No, Sicily. Anyway, right up to from Syracuse to the end of Sicily. Then of course. D-Day Italy was slightly different for me. I had a wet landing.
Tell us about where did you land?
Reggio Calabria. Reggio Calabria. This time I went ashore, stripped of my own personal gear except a valise and a bedroll. My big pack on my back was loaded with a jerry can of water. I had half a dozen. I can't think of the name. Half a dozen They were fractured frames for the legs. Thomas Prince, yeah. Half a dozen Thomas Prince. And the pouches, which would put water, normally been filled by ammunition, not for the medics, were carrying drugs already for the Styrets then. And therefore they'd fallen in the water, couldn't have got up. Anyway, I went ashore, there was no problem at all. In fact, they were handing out flowers as well on the shore.
You weren't in the fire?
No, not there. Anyway, we opened a hospital there, and the rest were joined as they came up. And again, it was the same set all the way through. But just before Campobasso, there was some delay. The German resistance was stiffening. And when we went into Campobasso, it was a bit dicey. We were attached, I think, to the Canadians at the time. And we set up this hospital in a school. And at night, the town itself was completely in the hands of anybody that took it. German patrols would come in, our patrols would go out. But they never interfered with us. Never came in. Yeah, they might leave a wounded man at the door. I think they did on one occasion. And now from there on, as the fighting drew away, things got easier. And then one day we got rid of our patients, and we're all drawn up in the square, because now it was quite calm for us there, and told that the unit was being disbanded.
Now, when was that?
Oh, don't ask me why, I can't tell you. The idea was that there were two other units of the same casualty clearing station. They were taking the three units and making three out of them, but only one was going to come home. Only one was going to be sent away, not home. They didn't mention the word home, to go back to form a new one of the men who had been in service the longest. So that was our 15 CCS, which I belong, our sister one, to which he joined up in January 40. That's the 14th, not January, in Easter 40. That was the 14 CCS. And we now became the 3 CCS.
So you were third casualty clearing service?
Well, yeah. But we had no equipment, nothing. We had it all, handed it all over. And now the fugitives. The veterans from the three now formed this 3 CCS, and we came home to England.
When is this? Before or after D-Day?
Oh, before D-Day. Well before D-Day. I think the intentions were that we were going to be there on D-Day. And it's good. Speaking to my friend who stayed in that unit before, because I'll tell you what's happening soon, I did plan D-Day.
So you
I've come back to England, right? Now here I have to say, we landed at Gourock in Scotland after a voyage which was much quicker home than going out, because we didn't no longer had the submarine manners as bad as it was then, as it had been going out. And the arrangements were wonderful, because as we landed on the lighters, it's the very same lighters that are taking us out to the ship to take us away, took us back to the shore. And there were lines of tables loaded with sandwiches and tea and everything. And we finally got on the train, and we told them, we'd tell us when to get off. And we travelled we stopped just outside Glasgow. And one of the boys in the carriage with me was effing and blinding. He lived in Glasgow, and he could see his bedroom from the train. We stopped at York, and there was another incident. Of course, York Station was closed. Closed by MPs and everything. And the troop trains were supposed to be secret. But all the schoolboys are running alongside. Give us our 8 Army badge, mister. So everybody knew who we were. Anyway, there was a scream, and on one of the other platforms, a lady porter, a women porter, had collapsed. She'd recognised her brother amongst this, because nobody knew we were coming home. Anyway, we finished up in Cambridge, and I can tell you the number. It was number 5 West Road. I have a photograph of it here. Here they again, the arrangements were marvellous, because they arrived early in the morning, but it was a full Sunday roast dinner laid on for us. And we were taken to back rooms after Nissen huts, big Nissen huts in the garden. And the bunks were made, and on each bunk was a packet of cigarettes, a bar of chocolates and matches, and a banana or an apple, I think I had. And all night long, they were bringing in big buckets of tea. No one could sleep. Anyway, previous to, while at sea, they'd been taking eight names and addresses, where you were going, and new the size of uniform. And they told us that those that were destined for Scotland and places like that would go first, and then the Londoners would go last. Of course, there weren't so many. Of course, we're different units now. The makeup was different. It wasn't mainly young Northerners and Southerners. We're from all over, Wales and everything.
The third casualty claim.
The third one.
Yeah. Was all everybody.
Yeah. Anyway, no, I have to tell you, I have to go back to Taranto. Not Taranto. Yes, Taranto. It's here that an incident happened that I'm not very happy about, and it still gives me nightmares to some extent. The third CCS was, wait, I have to go back because this leads to something later on, was stationed around the perimeter of the port at Taranto, waiting for transport to take us up. Of course, we could bomb DOMS continuously. And we were sleeping in slit trenches. No tents, because all our equipment had been left behind. There was a raid. I have to remember, I know to make the point that where my slit trench was, most of us were very, very soft, sandy soil. This bomb landed a few yards from my trench, exploded, and I was drawn out by the implosion. I wasn't physically hurt. My eyes trembled and shook for a bit, and my knees were grazed because I landed on my knees and my elbow. I never thought anything of it. I got home. Anyway, we got to Cambridge, and after a few days up there, I managed to get in touch with my folks, and they met me when I went home to London. I had my leave, 3 weeks leave.
What did you do? What was it like?
Well, first of all, coming into London from Cambridge, I hadn't realised just how bad the bombing was. One incident, my mate and I were sitting there because we'd been issued with the 8th Army flats. Very few of them were about at that time. And an old lady sitting up says, "Have you come from the Middle East?" "Oh, yes, darling." "You haven't not supposed to say anything." "You thank you very much, you did a good job." Well, that's all. Anyway, my family. And the fun of that, it was flat. Apart from meeting my family, all my mates were not there. One or two had been killed. All the girlfriends that I knew were working or in factories or whatever. Everybody was at war. Of course, I had a wonderful time going around to see the family and friends. I'm not a pub man, but the local pubs, so almost for a party, like, because they knew me. They paid the first round. And I was okay. Yeah, I went back and started to retrain, because this time I'd been informed that I was going to be a beach brick. That was one from all the arms and branches formed up on the beach to assist where they could or whatever was necessary.
Which now, what do you remember of that training? I get the feeling you didn't do it for long, but I mean,
just as my own job, but then more advanced first aid to deal with casualties on the spot. I didn't look forward to that. Why I'd been Peach Brick, I don't know. However, we've been back to Cambridge sometime, and one night we had an air raid. And this is the part of my life that I'm not very happy about and I'm not very proud of. They had this air raid. Didn't affect me. But the very next night, I couldn't sleep. I was shivering, sweating, went off my food. I didn't know what it was. I stuck it for about 3 weeks, till eventually I didn't go sick. I realised that, I don't know what it was, but that it was something that was out of the ordinary, and I went to see my CO privately. I explained to him, I don't want to go sixer, because still I was the only Jewish boy in the unit, apart from all the others that had come in, still the only Jewish boy. I couldn't eat. During the day it was apprehensive, and the sound of a plane or anything, and I'd break out into a cold sweat. Oh, to cut a long story short, the seven medical officers examined me, and they said it was nervous battle exhaustion. Used to be called shell shock. I'm not very proud of that. It's something I can't help. However,
now, did they treat you at all, or did they just tell you you'd got it?
No. I was posted away to a rehabilitation centre, and I underwent treatments.
Where was the rehab?
I couldn't tell you. Don't remember much about it. Because it's all actually, I don't remember it because I don't want to remember it. If you know what I mean.
And do you remember what the treatment was at all?
No, long sleep, induced sleep, psychiatry treatment. And when they said I was fit enough to go back, I asked to go back to my old unit, or to at least to a medical unit, and the answer was no. I said, why not? You could be working in the ward or a theatre, blooming normally, and something would upset you off again, you'd be lose where you were. And I think, I've always considered that to be cowardice, I don't know. But, however, this part I don't often speak about, and it's only something that I told my family. I'm not proud of it, I can't help it. Something I didn't want.
So what happened? I mean, they wouldn't let you rejoin your own unit. I
couldn't go back, but in case, that should I be on duty and I snap, other people would result in suffering from it. Which disappointed me, but they did find me a job eventually as medical orderly in a non-combatant unit. It wasn't a medical unit. And it was then that I went to Belgium. It was them I went to. I missed D-Day and I went to this unit. I've seen three of the officers had never seen any action.
Now, this would be September 1944 onwards.
Yeah.
And which non-combatant unit was it? Do you know what it
was?
It
was the 105. It's HQ. HQ 105 Reinforcement Group. Now, they controlled reinforcements for all arms all over the world. So all the work was done by officers.
And you joined them in 1944 in Belgium. Whereabouts?
I joined them here in England before going over with them to the continent. We landed in France and went from France to Holland and Belgium. And, we were pretty far forward because as we